Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Arlington Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, Mike Ross, now Arlington Chamber of Commerce, Mark Haas, AEG, Rob Longman, Longman and Van Greck, Vince Chrysler, Dark Cubed, and Les Smolin, Vistage. Les, will you please give us a rundown on who we're going to have the opportunity of speaking with today?
Sure, Mike. Mike Black, COO, JMA Solutions, Ken Fang, President, Obama, Stephen Robbins, Principal at Lurcher Early Brewer, Greg Sullivan, President and CEO, Sullivan, Brewett, Spiros, and Blaney.
Let's get to know our first guest, Mike Black, COO of JMA Solutions. Mike, what is JMA Solutions? What are you guys doing?
JMA Solutions is a government contractor. We do management consulting and professional services.
How large or how small is this organization?
The company is about 150 employees, and if you count independent consultants and subcontractors, we have 200 people doing the work in the name of JMA.
Mm-hmm. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Alabama. However, I'm a military brat, mm-hmm. and I've lived a lot of places.
How many different schools did you go to prior to graduating high school?
I probably went to about 10 different schools before I graduated from high school.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have two sisters, so there's three of us, and I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest, huh? And what did that do to you, growing up the oldest of three, moving to all those different places?
Being the oldest, I was thrust into a leadership position of taking care of my sisters, babysitting, cooking for them when my parents were working or both working.
Well, you used the word you were thrust into it. The point is you took that responsibility. I mean, you could have played victim or something, but you didn't. And so you're 12, 13 years old, and you're taking what kind of responsibility did you have to take for your younger sisters?
I had to basically take care of them. They were 4 and 5 years younger than me, so just the human needs of cooking and safety.
How did that feel? Your friends are outside playing, and you're taking care of your two sisters.
You know, sometimes that wasn't the best thing or what I wanted to do, but and part of being a family and taking care of sisters, that's what was instilled in me.
So when you moved around the 10 different schools when you were a kid, how did you go about establishing yourself in each of those communities?
Well, I learned how to make friends at every place that we moved to be accepted within the community or within the school.
How'd you do that?
I was involved in a lot of sports. I played baseball and football. Baseball was my favorite sport. Mm-hmm. And
well, how'd you do that with baseball? How'd you use baseball to establish relationships moving around all that much?
I was a pretty good athlete, and I played outfield in baseball and usually rose to be a leader or a captain of the team, played center field.
Well, how'd you do that? How'd you end up being the captain or the leader of those teams moving around so much? You were the outside kid. Why would they, like, depend on you?
I was the new kid on the block, but when you are a good athlete, you end up being accepted by folks, and then you get the opportunity to display your leadership skills when you get put into a position like being center field, directing the outfield.
Uh-huh. There's somebody here that knows you from a previous life. Vince, what's his reputation?
Yeah, Mike is just known through everybody as somebody that takes care of people and cares about, you know, whether it's the youngest airman or his direct reports. He just cares personally about everybody.
How do you know that about him?
I actually had the opportunity to work for him, and he is somebody that I have looked up to ever since I worked with him, and I consider him a mentor and a friend.
Why'd you look up to him?
Because he takes care of people. I went through some interesting challenges while I was there in terms of deciding to leave the Air Force, and you know, there are lots of ways he could have reacted, but he supported me.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
Mike, what book or movie growing up really profoundly affected you and why?
More so a movie after I grew up, but it was about a story that happened while I was growing up or before I was born, Red Tails, about the Tuskegee Airmen and what they persevered. As I mentioned, I was born in Alabama. I was born in Tuskegee.
Why was that book so important to you? Why was that movie so important to you?
Seeing what those airmen went through and to be successful.
Was your father involved with that?
My father was a graduate of Tuskegee Institute at that time, and actually some of his instructors were Tuskegee Airmen.
So you took a genuine interest in your father's history.
Absolutely. My father served in the Army for 28 years.
What was the story about your mom, by the way?
My mom was a clerical worker, and she was instrumental in the education in the family. In fact, she's the reason I went to the Air Force Academy. She did everything except write the essay and sign the name. So I tell everybody, mm-hmm. my mom got the appointment to the Academy, and I went in her stead.
So you've got a lot of respect for both mom and dad, don't you?
I do have a lot of respect for both my parents.
How's that played out in terms of your business career?
Well, I've learned a lot about a leadership, building a foundation, academics from my parents, and I've carried that through all the leadership positions that I had
in
the Air Force.
Yeah, but your mom and your dad, they weren't COO of a 150, 200 person firm. What do you mean you learned that stuff from them?
Well, my dad was a leader in the Army, and you know, commanded troops, and I was able to see him grow from the rank of lieutenant all the way to colonel. And so I adapted and put that in my DNA in my
Rob,
baggage.
Rob, what's your question there?
We've heard that you are a very caring person. How does that relate back, and how are you a caring person at your workplace over your team members?
Yeah, has that helped you build your team?
Well, I think taking care of people is the most important thing that you can do, providing people the tools, the resources, and the environment to be successful. Once they are successful, they're going to do things to help the company be successful. A happy person is going to perform better than an unhappy person.
Les?
Yeah. Why was it so important for you to get an education through the Air Force Academy? Why was your mom so adamant about that?
Well, it was a given that I was going to school, and then we started looking for places for scholarships, and my mom introduced the academies to me. And after researching, I thought it was something that I could do, and we went ahead and applied to all the academies, and I ended up getting an appointment to the Air Force Academy.
Mm-hmm. So education plays a pretty big role in who you are?
Absolutely. With both my parents being college graduates, and the story of my dad's family, seven of them went to Tuskegee. Actually, six of them went to Tuskegee, so mm-hmm. I got to see that.
Vince?
Yeah, during the break, you'd mentioned kind of at the age of five, you had this kind of foundational experience. Briefly tell us about that and then say why that's affected you today.
Yes, I lived in Ethiopia, which is now Eritrea. And the first school that I went to at 5 years old was an Italian Montessori school. Spoke Italian at that school, so I was one of two Americans there. Had to learn Italian to learn.
In Ethiopia at the age of five?
In Ethiopia at the age of five. Haile Selassie was still the emperor, and he was
what
alive.
What did that do to you? What did that do to you? What did you get from that?
It was just a fantastic experience that I can reflect back
what
on.
What are you talking about? What do you mean? You're from Alabama, and right. All of a sudden you're in Ethiopia and Italian?
Right.
It's like a great experience?
Well, learning Italian, we had a maid who could speak five languages. Italian was one of them, and so she helped me with my Italian.
You implicitly have a really true and deep appreciation for other people?
Absolutely. It's all part of growing up and being part of team. And a team, you know, everybody has to do their role for the team to be successful.
Doesn't it frustrate you when people are different than you?
I think diversity and inclusion really make for a good team.
So you understand where people fit on the team.
Absolutely, and also sometimes putting people into the right positions if they're not in the right position to begin with.
So when you were moving those 10 times and you ended up being the outfielder or whatever role you were playing on the baseball team, so you naturally understood where everybody fit. Did you, like, quietly help people move into the position they should have been in?
Sometimes quietly and sometimes vocally.
Uh-huh. Vince, what's your next question?
Yeah, and I think as we were talking beforehand, it's really the importance of making friends as you were moving, right? And so what skills did you learn that helped you make friends growing up that make you a good leader now?
Well, appreciating what everybody brings to the table and accepting people for who they are is a way to make friends, and it's a way to ensure that you have that diversity and inclusion mm-hmm. in your business.
Mm-hmm. Rob, what do you think of?
You keep using this word team, but it seems almost as if your very first team was your family. How did that structure push you into creating all these other teams?
Well, a family unit is a team, and so I was exposed to that, you know, day in and day out while I was living at the household, and that is part of my DNA, and I was able to use that skill set in all the leadership positions that I had in the military and now in the private sector.
Mark?
If the people you grew up with could see you now, would they recognize you right now? Would they see a line of sight between who you were as a kid and who you are now?
I think most people would. Everybody that knows me from growing up knew that I played team sports. I'm very much a part of a team in all the jobs that I had in the military and then the two jobs that I've had in the private sector and being a chief operating officer.
Mike, what is the website address for JMA Solutions?
It is jma-solutions.com.
We've been speaking with Mike Black, CEO of JMA Solutions, here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-hosts, Mr. Les Smolin, Vistage, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, Mike Rossnow, Arlington Chamber of Commerce, Mark Haas, AEG, Rob Longman and Van Grack, and Vince Chrysler, Dark Cubed. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We will be back in a moment right after this break. And your name is?
Scott Pacheco.
And Scott, what organization are you with?
Lurch, Early & Brewer.
And what do you do in this organization of Lurch, Early & Brewer?
I work in communications, doing newsletters, events, publications.
Newsletters, events, publications. Did you write the website?
I wrote parts of it.
You wrote parts of it. And what do you mean you wrote parts of it? You actually did the writing?
I worked with attorneys to rewrite their bios, worked on practice group descriptions.
So you're all about communications. How young were you when this was showing up?
Very young. My mother went back to college when I was in middle school, high school, and I ended up cooking for the family.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I'm the oldest of four.
You're the oldest of four, and you ended up being... You're the responsible one. You were cooking for them. Your friends are out playing, and you're cooking for the family, huh?
Yeah, they instilled in me that it was important to keep the family dinners going as long as possible.
Uh-huh. So how's that playing itself out in terms of your business career nowadays?
I like to be in the know. I like to know what's the inner workings of how business is going.
Oh, my gosh. You're built to be the communications dude in this law firm because you're trying to figure out what's going on inside the firm and communicate it to the outsiders. It's your implicit nature, isn't it?
Yes.
What is?
Communicating, making sure everybody's on the same page, making sure I know where everybody's at.
That's like what you did with the family when you're cooking the dinners.
Yes, and now I do the spreadsheets for the family vacations and whose flight gets in where. And
oh, my gosh, you're a natural organizer. You're doing it with the family dinners. You're now doing it with the communications of the firm. So your nature is to make sure that the communications is also consistent, isn't it?
Absolutely.
What do you mean by that?
When everybody's not on the same page, it just creates so many inefficiencies.
What's the website address of this organization?
LurchEarly.com, LurchEarly.com.
And your name again is?
Scott Pacheco.
And this has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
Mary Claire.
And Mary Claire, what organization are you with?
The Roslyn Business Improvement District.
And what is the Roslyn Business Improvement District?
We really are a central force in the neighborhood. We're sort of the glue that holds everything together, and we make sure that it is a great place to be and that people know that it's a great place to be.
What's your role in this organization?
I'm the president.
Uh-huh. How come you're saying that with a smile in your face?
Because I think really it fits my personality quite well.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
By nature, I'm a people person. I'm a collaborator. I love bringing the right people to the table to get things done, and that's really what the Roslyn Bid does. We get things done for the neighborhood.
Well, when you say you get things done for the neighborhood, is this to help businesses? Is it to help the residents? Who's it to help? Who are you trying to help?
I think that's one of the more interesting aspects of the job is the diversity of the stakeholders. We work at the center of the politicians, the residents, business leaders, retailers, hoteliers, anyone who is involved in making the community a better place. We're really at the center point of that.
That would drive some people crazy, being in the middle of all that stuff, and you sort of enjoy that?
I thrive on it.
What do you mean?
So it's one of the challenging aspects of the job is the diversity. Everyone wants different things at different times, and so you have to sort of be a collaborator. You have to bring people together, be a convener, really to make sure that the neighborhood is not only beautiful and active, but that it's economically successful for the long run.
So you're concerned about making sure that it's a win-win-win-win-win. Everybody wins all the time.
Absolutely, and I think the greatest reward came pretty recently when Nestle USA moved their corporate headquarters across country, and they chose Roslyn, and I think that really speaks to the dynamic nature of the neighborhood.
What's the website address of this organization?
RoslynVA.org.
Let me have that one more time.
RoslynVA.org.
And your name again is?
Mary Claire.
And this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Ken Fang, president of Mobomo. What is Mobomo, Ken?
We're a tech transformation company, mostly in mobile, web, and cloud.
Uh-huh. And how large or how small is this organization?
About 140 people.
And where are you from originally?
I was born in Illinois, grew up in the Boston, Massachusetts area.
Uh-huh. And how many brothers and sisters?
Two sisters, one older, one younger.
So what was growing up, you're the only boy, you grew up between two sisters. What did that do to you? What was the effect of that?
So I was your classic middle child. So I was the one that had to kind of figure out how to build consensus between everybody.
So this ability to build consensus, has that ever helped you in business?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
What do you mean?
It helps me see a lot of different angles and be able to get, you know, kind of cohesive win-win.
I read the newspapers, and I know that the CEO, if they don't get their way, they're just going to be firing people. Isn't that the way it works?
Yeah, no, it doesn't really work that way.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
I think if you handle it that way, people are going to leave you, right? So you have to, in order to lead, you have to have a shared vision.
So you're telling me your two sisters, one older, one younger, prepped you for being a CEO?
Yeah, pretty much.
Uh-huh. Have you ever been a CEO or a president previously?
Yeah, so I have another company, Altum, that I started a while back.
Oh, so you've done that. How young were you when you, didn't you tell us a story about some sort of a computer lab thing you were doing at 13? What was that all about?
Oh, yeah, so at 13, I was able to work in a computer lab. I was really actually just moving computers around.
And what happened? That evolved into something else.
I learned how to program and started playing around with that. And
so you were working in a computer lab, moving computers around. You ended up learning how to program, and then what happened?
So then it was actually pretty cool. So a buddy of mine, we got a contract to build some software for a large publishing company.
How old were you?
It was probably around 15, 16.
And how much did you get paid for that?
It was like $2,000.
So that's a pretty pivotal moment in your life, isn't it?
It was, yeah.
Why? Why was that so pivotal?
I think two things. One is obviously as a kid, that was a lot of money. And it was pretty wild because we actually got royalties after that we didn't even know we were going to. So we just kept getting checks. The other thing was that we got to create stuff. Like we like to build things.
Mark?
So in every group growing up, you have relationships with all your friends. What was your role in that group? You said you had a group of four people that were pretty tight.
Oh yeah, I would say I was kind of the nerdy one. I was the builder of that. You know, I like to build things.
So growing up as a third middle child, you said you were the rebel. Are you still consider yourself a rebel?
I do. I mean, I do actually think that that's semi-important for, you know, being in technology because it changes so fast. So you do have to go against the grain to keep up in front of it.
And being a rebel growing up, how has that helped you to develop to become a COO?
I think the biggest thing is to, you know, understand that you have to keep changing, right? Like you can't be comfortable with the status quo.
Mm-hmm. Les?
I want to come back to this rebel thing about, you know, going against the grain. What's that got to do with what you do now?
You know, in transforming technology, it's usually not the technology, right? The technology is out there. You know, you have artificial intelligence, you have blockchain, you have all this innovation or whatever. It's a question of, like, how do I get people to actually adopt those things so that they're, you know, like, can move forward.
Mm-hmm. Vince?
So you're a leader of an organization, and you consider yourself a coder, right?
I do.
So why would anybody follow a coder?
Because... that's a good question. I think coders invent things, you know, out of digital technology to advance. Yeah. You know.
But there are lots of coders and nobody's following them. So why are they following you? What do they see in you?
So I think I did make that pivot as far as, you know, so every coder has to make that decision of like, oh, am I going to sell out and actually go to the business side of things?
Yeah.
You know, we talked a little bit about it before is that, you know, you, in order to get the respect of the coders, you almost have to like best them in coding. Like it's a little bit of a challenge. And so once they figure out, like, oh, geez, God, this is not just a suit. He actually knows how to program and understands code, then they'll follow you.
So you,
and
develop,
you can build amazing things.
You develop respect of the coders. So they appreciate you understand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
What do mom and dad do for a living?
Dad's a doctor. Mm-hmm. Mom was a scientist.
Uh-huh. And didn't you tell us when you got your first job, something happened with mom? What was that all about?
Oh, when I got my first job.
Or something, you, you started the company or something? You started the company? Or?
So, yeah, no, I was working for a company here in Arlington, and then I actually quit my job, and I started my first business, and I didn't tell her for about a month.
Why don't you tell your mom what you were doing?
Because I knew she would have been like, oh, God, like, you know, are you going to be okay, right?
So mom, did you tell dad?
Nope, didn't tell dad either.
How long did it take you to tell your father that you started a business?
Oh, well, my parents are separated, so I haven't really kept in touch with my father as much.
So it's interesting. So you started this business, and your mom was a bit concerned that, you know, that you're going to be safe. And but you felt comfortable with it. You felt comfortable taking that risk.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How do you think she feels about what's ended up happening with the first business and what's happening with the second one?
Oh, now she's, I mean, she's a big fan and, you know, is encouraging other siblings and stuff like that.
Oh, interesting. Next question. Who's got
building things requires that you probably try and experiment and fail a whole lot. So how'd you learn to cope with failure?
Ooh, I failed a lot.
What do you mean?
I think I'm stubborn.
Stubborn.
You know, and so that I think is actually most of the battle is that kind of stamina of like, okay, well, we'll try it again. You know.
So who you like in terms of that?
Ooh. You know, probably both of my parents have that kind of characteristic.
What do you mean?
Or whatever. Just kind of like the drive and the stamina to kind of, you know, because when they, so they, you know, they came to this country for college and they had to kind of, you know.
Where are your parents from?
China.
China. And they came to this country for college.
They did.
Uh-huh. And so you're first generation.
I am first generation.
How do you think that affected you?
It was interesting because there was a lot of just, you know, trying to fit in, right? Like, be like a normal American family and that sort of thing.
And what'd you learn from that experience, just trying to fit in, considering your first generation in, from China?
I think that also comes in with the consensus building, right? Kind of, you know, weird sort of way, reading people and figuring out, like, okay, well, this is how I get into this group. This is how I kind of, you know.
So you're on. So you have a natural understanding that you developed trying to fit in of how to fit in.
Strangely, yeah, I didn't think so until much later on.
Rob, what do you think? Yeah.
So you started doing the computer programming about 15 to 16.
Yep.
After you started doing that, did you have any other thoughts about doing anything else?
No, not really. My parents wanted me to be a doctor. I thought about being an architect, you know, always kind of in the building thing or whatever. But I loved software.
So have you always enjoyed building things? Did you like Legos and other things like that as a kid?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was a big Lego fan. Initially I wanted to be a carpenter and a magician. So, you know.
But building, taking things apart, how do things work?
Yeah, pretty much.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Your sisters, are they aware of what you're doing nowadays?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Are they surprised?
Probably not.
Why not? What do you think they saw as a kid that...
I was always like, you know, so my dad... luckily, my dad being a doctor, he was like one of the first people on the block to have like a computer for his billing, right? But I just got on there and started trying to build video games, really. But.
So you had a natural proclivity with technology.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What's the website address of this organization known as Mobomo?
Mobomo.com. M-O-B-O-M-O.
M-O-B-O-M-O. We've been talking with Ken Fang, who's the president of Mobomo here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, we will be back in a moment right after this. Want help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that. They've succeeded in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars, and some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. And your name is?
Chuck Ockletree.
And Chuck, what organization are you with?
The National Conference Center and West Belmont Place Event Center.
Uh-huh. And what makes this organization special?
The National Conference Center was built to be the nation's premier meeting and event venue. It's not a traditional hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we have 900 guest rooms and all the services and amenities of a traditional hotel,
mm-hmm.
because of our size, we're mm-hmm. able to deliver an environment that is very conducive to learning, development.
And who are your clients?
Our clients are many of the corporate 100, corporate 500, as well as because of our location in Leesburg, Virginia,
mm-hmm.
we do a lot of business with Washington, D.C. Government agencies.
Mm-hmm. And what do you like about your job?
What I like about is we've had the opportunity to bring new leadership to the National Conference Center, blend with the tremendous service team that's built a reputation over the years for great service. And we've had a lot of fun helping our clients take advantage of the 65-acre campus.
How about you personally? What do you enjoy about your job?
I enjoy that we've had a very, very, very successful turnaround in mm-hmm. The 2.5 years,
mm-hmm.
Taking the National Conference Center from where it was in 2014 mm-hmm. with the new ownership. We've literally doubled the revenue.
And what's your role in the organization again?
My role is Chief Marketing Officer.
And what's that mean?
Good question. It means that we're involved with branding, mm-hmm. Everything to do with the sales, the marketing, the promotion, and the business development.
So you're actually going out there and you're actually involved with helping bring in the clients.
Exactly, yes.
And I guess the way you're doing that is you're actually talking to a lot of the clients, making sure that, you know, your services are valuable.
We talk to a lot of the clients and we do a lot of events as well.
Super. What's the website address of the organization?
www.conferencecenter.com.
Let me have that one more time.
www.conferencecenter.com.
This has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
Jeff Lawson.
And Jeff, what organization are you with?
I'm with Lakota Hotels and Resorts.
And what do you guys do? What kind of stuff are you doing that's special?
Well, we manage conference centers and hotels, and we're currently managing the National Conference Center in Leesburg, Virginia.
National Conference Center. How large or how small is this organization?
The conference center itself is 900 rooms in size, 350,000 square feet of meeting space, dining facilities for 850, exercise facility all set on 61 acres of land.
Wow, this is a large organization, isn't it?
It is, very large.
Uh-huh. And what's your role in the organization?
I'm the general manager, and I have oversight of the property and all the hospitality services that occur.
Well, what's the general manager supposed to do with this large facility?
Make sure 8 executive committee members and a full staff of 210 do their daily jobs.
So how many folks do you have running through your halls on a weekly basis or daily basis or annual basis? What's that look like?
Well, on a weekly basis, on a full house, we'll have 900 per night, 7 nights, 6,300, which translates to about 20,000 meals a week.
Wow. And your job, are you working 9 to 5, or do you end up having to work evenings and early mornings and weekends and stuff like that?
No, I'd say I'm always on duty.
Uh-huh. What do you enjoy about your job?
Meeting people, working with some of the finest hospitality people in Virginia, which is my team, and meeting our clients, because they're wonderful.
So you're helping your clients plan their events?
Well, we help plan. They are there for some form of education that goes on at one end of our business, and at the other end of our business, they're there for social catering events, weddings and such.
So you're running a 24/7 facility, aren't you?
We are.
Uh-huh. What's the website address of this organization?
Conferencecenter.com.
Let me have that again.
Conferencecenter.com.
And your name again is?
Jeff Lawson.
And the name of the organization?
Lakota Hotels and Resorts.
And this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Stephen Robbins, principal of Lurch Early Brewer. Stephen, what is Lurch Early Brewer?
We're a full-service law firm located in Bethesda, Maryland. We have approximately 11 practice areas.
Mm-hmm.
And
how large or how small is the team?
We have 60 lawyers, and we have 60 or so.
All right. Where you from?
Staff.
And where you from originally?
From Maryland.
Mm-hmm. And how many brothers and sisters?
I have one older brother.
Uh-huh. And what was your relationship with your older brother when you were kids?
Always a very solid relationship, like best friends.
Really? How's
Absolutely.
That affected your relationship with your clients nowadays?
Well, it actually has a direct relationship in that I look at my clients as not only being clients and in a professional relationship, but I also take great interest in their lives and mm-hmm. in their success.
Mm-hmm. I understand that when you were a kid, you were involved with a couple of clubs. And something. What happened? What was that with that car wash when you were a kid?
Well, as a kid, I was always interested in trying to earn that buck. Mm-hmm. And even when I was 7 years old, I got a group of kids together, and there was a lot of construction in the area. We used to go around and wash construction workers' trucks and vehicles for to raise money.
Whose idea was that?
It was my idea, and grabbing people was my idea, too, I guess.
All right, so you had a natural ability to understand a market. And you have ideas, business ideas, and your nature is also to pull a team together. So it sounds to me like aside from just being an attorney, I'm wondering, when you sit and talk to your clients, do you talk to them about their business ideas?
Very much so. I take great interest in my clients, and I often try to bring opportunities to my clients as well, which adds a lot of value.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that even though you went to law school and you practiced law, you're an idea guy and part entrepreneur as well?
Absolutely. In the type of work that I do, which is land use and zoning work, I often see opportunities in large part before clients see them, and I have the ability to bring opportunities that I think would be a great fit to certain clients.
So I understand that you also were involved with a jazz band. What was that? What instrument did you play in that jazz band? What was your effect on that team?
Well, I played the saxophone. I wasn't the first chair, mm-hmm. but I enjoyed it and made a lot of great friends. It was in high school.
Mm-hmm. What did you do about fundraising for that organization?
Yeah, we always needed to raise funds for the band, and I was the guy who sort of put together the ideas, worked with vendors, whether it was candy or donuts or raffle tickets.
Wait. You're just one of the kids there. You're the one who stepped up to the plate as opposed to one of the parents to figure out how to raise money and pull the team together?
We didn't rely on the parents other than to maybe have certain relationships with vendors and maybe to help us get around to
Well, your
to
nature
sell.
Is to take responsibility and make things happen. Rob, what are you thinking?
What role did your parents have in inspiring you for those types of positions?
My father was in the auto wrecking business, and my mom was a real estate broker, and they both inspired me quite a bit.
How young were you when you went to work with your father?
I was about 7 or 8 years old.
And what kind of business was that, an auto wrecking
business? He was in the auto wrecking and scrap business.
So what did you do in that business?
I would go to work with him primarily on Saturdays, and I'd work behind the counter and assist customers.
That must have been terrible. Your friends are outside playing, and you've got to go to work with your father?
Besides being and having the opportunity to spend time with my dad on a Saturday, I loved making money.
Sounds to me like you also really enjoy relationships.
I do. I do. In my business, particularly the law that I practice, it's more than just the legal aspects. It's also a lot about relationships.
Mm-hmm. I bet you lose a lot of clients, huh?
My clients, I think we have a great relationships and they're very long term, and we value each other very much.
And the reason they stick around is because.
Not only because of the advice and success that we as a law firm bring them, but because of the opportunities that we bring.
Yeah, my bet is that you do bring them ideas and that you really do value their relationship. Have you ever had a client in trouble that you cut a break for because you felt you should?
When you say cut a break for?
It could be that they had a problem paying a bill or something like that.
Well, every client is different. Mm-hmm. And you always have to look at circumstances and see how you can help people.
Well, you don't have to, but it sounds to me like your nature is to do exactly that.
Well, my nature is always to try to help people. I mean, that has been instilled in me since I was a young kid, mm-hmm. and trying to help people, and I do that to even today.
Next question.
You seem that you were on a lot of teams growing up. Do you consider yourself as part of your client's team?
My whole aspect as an attorney, as a land use attorney, I equate that to team play. I love team sports. I played some team sports. And I view the land use attorney, for example, as the quarterback of the team. And we organize all of our consultants, work with our clients, work with local governments, elected officials. And they're all part of a team and the community. Community building is hugely important to make something happen. And we've worked on very large projects and have been successful at that.
Interesting, Vince.
There's some great themes here about community building and fundraising and teams. How are you carrying out that legacy from your childhood now outside of your professional career?
We at Lurch, Early & Brewer value community building a lot, and we encourage people to get involved, and I do that personally myself. I was president of the Montgomery County Chamber of Commerce years ago, and I have served as the chair of the Montgomery County Public Safety Awards that honors all of our public safety individuals for 16 years now.
Scott, you work inside the firm. What's your role inside the firm?
I work in communications and marketing.
So you work with Stephen. What's his reputation inside the firm?
Stephen is a go-to attorney within the firm.
What do you mean he's a go-to attorney? What are you talking about?
If something's important, we run it by Steve.
Why do you do that?
He considers the firm as a whole. I would absolutely consider him kind of a captain of our team. And if he signs off on something, that means that it'll be in the best interest of everybody at the firm.
You said the best interest of the firm. So it's not a matter of his self-interest? You're not worried about him doing something selfish?
No, not at all. And, you know, we preach collegiality and relationships, and I think he really lives that.
That's interesting. So you're telling me that Stephen, who is going to be the head of the firm, short order,
yep.
Really embodies the spirit of being a leader, but not a selfish leader. He's the kind of guy that's really taken everybody into consideration as a leader.
Absolutely, and I think that's exactly why he was elected to lead the firm.
Why would he be elected to lead the firm? What do you mean?
We have a very democratic process, and if somebody doesn't have the respect of the firm, then they'll never take over the leadership position.
Wait a minute. He's going to be the leader of the firm because he's got everybody's respect? Is that so?
Absolutely.
It's not because of his ability to politic inside the firm. It's because the people respect him?
Absolutely not. He's one of the hardest workers we have.
He's also one of the hardest workers?
Absolutely.
Oh. Stephen, where'd that hard work come from? Where'd you learn that from?
As I said before, I learned hard work the right way from watching my father and from my mother. My mom was a stay-at-home mom until I was in high school, and then she got out there and became one of the most successful real estate brokers in Montgomery County, working long hours and, again, involved in real estate, which is where I also got some of my interest in real estate as well.
Uh-oh, you're like your mother, huh?
Like my mom in terms of my drive and hard work, even though my dad was an incredibly hard worker, but like my dad in terms of his personality of having sort of a fun-loving and loving humor and the like.
Huh, interesting. Who's got the next question here?
Yeah, where'd you learn about relationships? I mean, mom or dad, which one?
I would say that as far as relationships, probably more from my mom, but really more on my own. I was quite independent. Even though I had a strong family background, I was pretty independent as a young individual and growing up.
What do you mean independent growing up?
When I was involved not only in high school and in college and various activities, I really didn't engage my family in those activities. I really took it upon myself in terms of the drive that I had and what I would do for
his nature
people.
Was to take responsibility,
yeah.
You know, and he would rely on his parents, but it would say take responsibility.
I took responsibility, and to this day I just sort of gravitate towards responsibility without the need to have to check in.
So one of the reasons your clients don't leave you is they know they can depend on you.
I think that is a critical element of our relationship.
What is?
They can absolutely depend on me. Literally, what I'm called is sort of the 24/7 guy. They can call me whenever they need me.
Is that true? Is that really your nickname, the 24/7 guy? When they need somebody to talk to, you're there?
I wouldn't say that it is quote unquote a nickname, but it is true.
Because you care. Because you really want to be there for them. Because you appreciate what they're going through.
I mean, I do. I can give you an example. I took a trip recently to Antarctica. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness they had Wi-Fi.
What's the website address for this law firm, Lurch Early Brewer?
LurchEarly.com, LurchEarly.
And your name is Stephen Robbins, principal of Lurch Early Brewer. This is Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. And your name is?
Fred Diamond.
And what organization are you with, Fred?
I run the Institute for Excellence in Sales.
What is that? What is the Institute for Excellence in Sales?
We provide services for sales professionals at the senior level, mid-level, junior level. We have programs for women in sales and millennial in sales and sales teams.
So, and what are you doing for these folks? What kind of stuff do you help them with?
We provide training, traditional training all around the world. We also bring world-famous sales thought leaders and authors to regions around the country to provide workshops and seminars for sales leaders.
How long have you been doing this?
We created the organization about 5 years ago.
And why do you enjoy doing this? What turns you on about what you're doing for a living?
Well, we are of service to the selling professional. We believe that sales is the most important department in any company, and that we're trying to make sales professionals' lives better and trying to help them improve the trade.
And why do your customers keep coming back to you? Why would they come back or send their other people back to you?
Well, we run amazing programs. Sales training budgets have decreased, but we are bringing some of the top sales trainers around the world to sales teams.
And what's the advantage of bringing the top sales trainers to these teams? Why don't you just do it all yourself?
We're able to bring some of the best in the world at a very reasonable cost to our members, provide world-class sales training and sales performance improvement to these organizations.
So as opposed to keeping all the money for yourself and limiting only your words getting to your clients' ears, you're trying to make sure that they get the best of breed.
Exactly. Yeah, we bring some of the top sales thought leaders in the world. Neil Rackham, Jill Conrath, Mark Hunter, two sales teams around the world.
And where do you do these trainings?
Well, locally in the Washington, D.C. region, we have a number of programs. Every third Friday at the USA Today building in Tyson's Corner. Mm-hmm. We also have a women in sales program that's typically the second Tuesday.
What's the website address?
I4ESBD, the letter I, the number 4ESBD.
Excellent. .com?
.com or .org.
There we go. Thank you. This has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
Ramon Parker.
And Ramon, what organization are you with?
I'm executive director of Loudoun Free Clinic based in Leesburg.
And what is Loudoun Free Clinic? What kind of stuff do you guys do?
We're a charitable clinic serving 18 to 64-year-olds who are 200% or below the federal poverty level.
How many folks do you serve a year, and what do you do for them?
So we have about 1,000 patients, and we're offering 6,500 visits to those patients a year.
Doing what kind of stuff for these patients?
This would be similar to an internal medicine clinic if you were going to seek care. 90% of our patients are chronic disease patients, and so we're looking to take care of them long term.
So why don't you go into business and go make a lot of money? Why are you doing this?
Well, my goal really is to change the business of healthcare, making sure that we're taking care of it in a patient approach rather than a profit approach.
So is your background medicine?
My background's in public health, and I've been doing that for the last 15 years.
So what's the essence of your job? What are you trying? What do you do different than everybody else in the organization?
So I'm offering an opportunity for patients and for our staff to understand that everyone needs a chance, and so giving people a chance at their most vulnerable point can really help them to achieve the impossible.
Why is that so appealing to you?
Why is that appealing to me? Because someone did that for me. Someone helped me answer a question I had once.
Like what? When?
Why? Mm-hmm. Why do we see things the way they are today? Why are things still in a form where they're not benefiting the patients all the time? Mm-hmm. And then why is it that we haven't changed the business of healthcare yet?
How young were you when somebody helped you see that stuff?
Well, I was 13 when I saw that my last open heart surgery. I've had four.
Wow. So you've had some medical challenges.
I have. So I've been a patient. So my perspective as a healthcare leader helps me to understand what it's like to be on the table.
What's the website address for Loudoun Free Clinic?
That's loudounfreeclinic.org.
This has been your Business Spotlight. One, help building your business with help from this show's CEOs. Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. Some of the CEOs who have appeared on our shows over the last 10 years may be willing to help you grow, assuming you're serious about your success, serious about your own success, because it all starts with the leader. If you're serious about creating your own successful business, are truly committed to putting your nose to the grindstone and doing whatever it takes to make your business successful, we may be able to match you with successful CEOs who have created millions of jobs and earned millions of dollars to help you create your success. We've established unique relationships with a unique universe of over 7,000 CEOs who have created substantial wealth for their companies, their teams, and themselves. These women and men get the build in their blood and often continue to start and build businesses even after they've created substantial wealth for themselves because they love the challenge of building a business. Perhaps we can present you and your business to some of these CEOs to gain their interest in helping you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. To hopefully match you with some of the CEOs we've had on the show for the last 10 years. Mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Gregory Sullivan, President and CEO of Sullivan, Bruett, Spiros, and Blaney. Gregory, what is Sullivan, Bruett, Spiros, and Blaney? What are you guys doing?
We're a wealth management firm, so we have four different divisions. We have an investment division. We have a financial planning practice that does comprehensive planning, and we have a tax planning and preparation business, as well as a fiduciary business where we help
large. Right. And how large or how small is this organization?
We currently manage around $3.3 billion of assets.
How many clients do you have?
Around 1,000.
And how large or small is the team?
We have 60 people.
All right. How old is this firm?
We've been around 27 years.
And how'd you get a job with this place?
I co-founded it.
All right, about 27 years ago. Where are you from originally?
I moved around a lot when I was young, but I call Pittsburgh home.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I'm the baby of four.
What was the benefit of growing up the youngest of four?
You learn from everybody else's mistakes.
So how's that helped you build a business?
You know, a number of ways. One is you're always being aware. You're watching what people are doing. And
has that really helped you build a business, being aware and watching what everybody's doing?
Well, kind of. You're just more observant. So you're observant of what's going on around you and maybe how to handle situations differently.
So how's that helped you build a business? Give me an example.
You know, there's lots of scenarios where you have to bring the team together. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to get everybody to work together. You're trying to, you know, make sure everybody's on the same page.
I see. So because you were the youngest, your nature is to understand how the organization, how the family unit, or how everybody on the team is feeling.
That's right.
Tell me a little bit about you got a job when you were 15. What was that job all about?
I was working at Ponderosa Steakhouse. Yeah. So I came in initially as kitchen, washing dishes, but they were short-staffed on the line, so I quickly became the potato boy. I handled all the baked potatoes and French fries when you came down the line.
How long were you the potato guy at Ponderosa?
I did that job for about a year and a half.
So that was pretty terrible. You didn't like that, did you?
Oh, I loved it.
Why'd you like that? What are you talking about?
Yeah, you're working with people. There's a lot of pressure going on at the time. Amazingly enough, there's pressure when you're doing baked potatoes and you have a busload of people driving in. You're 20 potatoes short.
So what's
you got to quickly figure out how to solve the problem.
Well, you could have played dumb and, you know, made somebody else take responsibility. But it sounds to me like, you know, you really expanded the scope of that job into making sure there's enough potatoes and making sure stuff's getting out on time. What's that have to do with being the CEO of this organization known as Sullivan, Bruett, Spiros, and Blaney, which has... Did you say $3 billion under management?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you were the potato boy at the age of 15. What's the similarity there? What'd you take from that you use every day now?
Well, it's responsibility. So you have to be, interestingly enough, you have to plan it out. There's a lot of planning that goes on when you have an uncertain group of people coming through your restaurant. Mm-hmm. And you also have a manager who's kind of on your back, making sure you're doing the job right.
Your customers, in this case, making sure everybody's happy. Mark?
What activity did you really enjoy, gave you the most satisfaction growing up, and how does that feeling play out now in your activities at business?
Yeah, I was a probably the best activity was I was a wrestler, so I started wrestling when I was at age 11. My brother was a wrestler, so he kind of beat me up when we were growing up, so he kind of pulled me along into that sport. I think you learn a lot. You learn leadership. You learn how to stand on your own two feet. When you're on a mat, you're on your own. But when you come off the mat, you're a team. And so you look at both the team aspect of it as well as the individual side.
Liz?
Yeah, so just to follow up, what has that got to do with running a business?
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, you have your role, your responsibility, and, you know, you have to get the job done. But at the same time, it's a team activity. Everyone has a role, but how do you lead with the team? And who leads the team to make sure everybody's got the same focus and vision?
Rob?
You said earlier that you learned from your brothers and sisters seeing them fight with your parents, yet everybody still came out as family with trust. How do you relate that to working with your partners?
Yeah, well, I mean, a family issue, there's always disagreement. There's always different issues that come about. Interestingly enough, as the youngest, I tend to be more the counselor, bringing people together and solving it. And the same thing goes on in an office, right? There's a lot of issues, a lot of difference of opinions. People can argue, but someone needs to bring the group together and make sure it's cohesive and focused on what we're about to accomplish.
As the youngest, did you ever feel like you had to settle then if you were trying to bring people together, or do you feel like you still push to get your way then?
Oh, still push to get my way. I mean, that's the individual side of it. You know, you get it, but at the same time, you're having to listen to everybody else's ideas so that you know what you're trying to accomplish, which might be just harmony. But
Vince?
Yeah, how did those experiences growing up make you good at driving a strategy and vision for a company? I mean, incredible success as you've grown as a company. So what made you successful?
I think it was a lot. You bring people together, you realize people are the center. They're the soul of the business, just like on the team. All the individual wrestlers were the soul of the business. In a family, everyone's individual.
Wait, we're talking about a business that's a financially related firm. You're talking about the soul and the soul of a business? What are you talking about?
Yeah, so just like in a family, the soul of the family is the people. And how do they come together? The soul of the business is the people. How do you come together? There's lots of different personalities, a lot of different ideas. You have to bring them together. Same thing with clients. Clients come in with a lot of different ideas and different objectives. They become the soul to that aspect of it. And how do you make sure that we're accomplishing what they want to accomplish?
I'm just fascinated. I mean, evidently you know what you're talking about because you're running a business that does has $3.3 billion under management. So you certainly know what you're talking about. I'm just surprised that this business that's managing money talks about the soul and you're talking about people are the middle of everything. Am I reading that correctly?
Absolutely. I mean, it's about the people and it's about helping them to see the vision that what they can accomplish and where they can go in their life.
And this is both the clients as well as your team. What's the website address of this organization?
I'm sorry, say it again.
The website address of the organization?
Website is sbsbllc.com.
Let me have that one more time.
It's samboyllc.com.
We've been speaking with Gregory Sullivan, President and CEO, Sullivan, Brouette, Spiros, and Blaney here on Executive Leaders Radio. Les, can you give us a rundown of who else we've had an opportunity of speaking with today?
Sure. Mike Black, COO, JMA Solutions. We had Ken Fang, President, Mobomo. We had Stephen Robbins, Principal at Lurcher Early Brewer, and Greg Sullivan, President and CEO, Sullivan, Brouette, Spiros, and Blaney.
I would like to thank my co-host, Les Smolin, Vistage, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, Mike Rossnow, Arlington Chamber of Commerce, Mark Haas, AEG, Rob Longman, Longman and Van Grack, and Vince Chrysler, Dark Cube, for giving me hand structure and the questions. I'll be providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, that's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, we thank you for joining us today and have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.